Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
It is Tuesday, the 7th of November. You're listening to Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. It is Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs program with a panel of invited guests discussing the issues of the day with you for the next 2 hours. If you want to get involved with today's show, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
But first off, let's have a look at what's making the news, the front pages of the papers in the UK. Cancel armistice demo and moan admits PPE link are today's main stories. Looking at the front pages today, kicking off with several of the papers lead with, on the news that almost 300,000 women at risk of breast cancer are to be offered a drug that the trials have shown could help prevent the disease. Writing the Daily Telegraph, Amanda Pritchard, chief executive of NHS England, said it marked a new era for cancer prevention. There's a similar sentiment for the National Clinical Director for Cancer, Professor Peter Johnson, who in a comment piece for the Daily Express calls the announcement genuinely great news. The Times says the drug, Anastrozole, costs 4p a day and will save the NHS around £15 million in treatment costs. The Eye says Tuesday's King's speech setting out the government's agenda for the coming year will see the monarch forced to announce a shredding of eco-policy. The paper says the King, who has long campaigned on climate and environmental issues, will have to hide his true feelings as he heralds a new era of oil and gas exploration. The Times says new legislation for driverless vehicles will clear the way for buses, grocery deliveries and farm machinery to operate autonomously by the end of the decade. The Guardian leads on a warning from the United Nations about the overcrowding in shelters in Gaza. A UN official at a compound in the southern city of Khan Yunis has told the paper there is one toilet for up to 800 people and no room to sleep. The official says that everyone is just concentrating on survival. A 78-year-old poppy seller who was caught up in a pro-Palestinian rally in Edinburgh has told the Daily Mail he was punched and kicked by protesters. Jim Henderson, who served with the army in Northern Ireland, said he was set upon whilst manning a stall at Waverley Station on Saturday. Financial Times says that accountancy firm PwC is planning to axe up to 600 jobs in the UK after the number of resignations dropped below average, sources have told the paper, that a voluntary redundancy programme will be launched, but roles will be cut on a compulsory basis if not enough people opt to leave. The Sun claims that the Duke and Duchess of Sussex travelled to a Katy Perry gig on a private plane owned by a Texas oil tycoon. The paper notes the Duke is the face of a sustainable travel initiative and says the couple have been branded eco-hypocrites, and several of the papers carry quotes from an interview with Australian actress Elizabeth Debicki, who plays the role of Diana, Princess of Wales, in the final series of The Crown, the first episodes of which are set to be released next week. The Mail says the 33-year-old found the experience of filming the princess's final 24 hours very demanding, and she was reduced to tears while shooting the scenes surrounding her death. The Mirror quotes Debicki as saying she was carrying profound sadness when shooting the scenes. Those front pages then from the top today, going through the papers. Top of the poll today is Daily Express. Police call off protests on armistice weekend to avoid violence. The Daily Mail, poppy seller, 78, punched by protesters. Meanwhile, Metro, 300,000 get drug to avoid breast cancer. The Times, thousands to be spared cancer with 4p a day pill. And they've got pictures of the Just Stop Oil protesters who attacked a Velázquez painting in the National Gallery last night or yesterday. Meanwhile, Daily Pill, Daily pill halves risk of breast cancer. That is the Daily Telegraph. Meanwhile, in the Mirror, Michelle Monashock, finally she admits PPE link after 3 years of denying she had anything to do with the £200 million COVID deal. The Baroness changes her story. The Guardian, Gaza's despair. Everyone is just concentrating on survival. And they've also got the story about Monet's ties with COVID PPE. The I, Green King, forced to announce shredding of eco policy ahead of the speech. The Sun has a pop at Harry. Eco Harry flies to Katy Perry gig in oil tycoon's jet. The Financial Times leads with Trump. Trump defiant amid heated turn on witness stand in New York fraud trial. And finally, the Daily Star, just to provide some balance. The Daily Star says that a psychic has claimed that faithful pets send their owners loved-filled messages after they've died and still like us to talk to them. The headline reads, Bark from the Dead. And those, for better or worse, are your headlines this Tuesday, the 7th of November.
The weather forecast is brought to you by Liberty Seguros. Liberty Seguros gives you now €50 cash back for every new car, home or insurance policy you take out. But hurry, this offer is valid until the 27th of November only.
Weather on Talk Radio Europe. Find us at tre.radio.
Now then, let's look at what your weather is doing. Costa del Sol, 14 degrees and sunny. The high is 21. The winds are from the southwest and they are light to moderate. Granada, good morning to you. 5 degrees. Sunny today, a high of 16. Winds from the northwest, which are light to moderate. Almeria, 16 degrees. Your high today is 19. A sunny day in prospect with winds from the southwest, which are moderate. Good morning, Murcia. 13 degrees. Sunny, a high of 22. Winds from the northwest, which are moderate today. Alicante, good morning to you too. 14 degrees and sunny today in Alicante. The high is 21. The winds are from the southeast and they are light to moderate. Denia, 15 degrees. Sunny day in prospect. Winds from the north, which are moderate. Your high today in Denia is 19. Over on the islands, good morning, Ibiza. 18 degrees. Sunny spells, a high of 20. And the winds from the northwest, which are moderate. Mallorca, currently in Palma, it's 15 degrees. Sunny spells, a high of 19. And the winds are westerlies, which are moderate. And finally, Gibraltar, 13 degrees on the rock. Sunny, a high of 20. Winds which are from the south and they're light to moderate. And that's your weather.
The weather on Talk Radio Europe. Find us at tre.radio.
Viewpoint
with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. If you want to get involved with today's Viewpoint, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And those are the numbers to get involved. We're joined in the studio by Alf Brewer. Good morning, Alf.
Good morning, Giles.
And for the first time, we've got a newbie. We've got a newbie on the show. Good morning to Robert Hanley. Good morning to you, Robert.
Good morning to you.
Good to have you. Just explain a little bit, by the way. I'm going to turn the tables on you this time. Who exactly, you know, why you're on Viewpoint? And I know you're probably asking yourself that question right away now.
So why I'm here?
Yeah. In a professional capacity, professional. You have a background, rather. We didn't just grab you off the street in Britain and bring
you
in.
Oh, I thought you did. No, yeah, exactly. No. I was a journalist for the Telegraph, Dutch Telegraph, that's the leading Dutch newspaper, for 30 years. Started off as a politic reporter, and then I wrote feature stories worldwide. So I've been traveling around about 100 countries and... Here I am in Marbella.
Indeed. Well, very good to have you with us. We look forward to hearing anything that's prompting your viewpoint. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Official. You can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. So here we are. Here we are, panel. We still have this the situation in Gaza. It doesn't seem to be getting any better, despite calls for a ceasefire, humanitarian aid. The pictures have been making the front pages. And of all the papers, we have US representatives flying out. We have the situation, obviously, with the Gulf states and other states getting involved, saying, you know, we want a ceasefire. And of course, in the UK this week, or throughout Europe this weekend, of course, it's armistice. And it's, there are some, so there are so many fallouts from this. Let's just start with Alf, your situation, what we've got at the moment in terms of what you're seeing in your response, because you've not been on since the attacks of over a month ago.
A long time ago, yeah. Sorry about that. First of all, there's one or two things. Sharon, a few weeks ago, spoke about whether anybody had heard from Kate.
Yeah.
And we still haven't. I haven't heard her on the radio, and I hope that she's okay. And whether anybody's heard about her, it would be nice to hear from Kate Costa-Blanca.
Yeah, indeed.
And also on on Saturday, for those who weren't listening, on Giles' show, he was doing a bit from the papers about this brand spanking new book by Nadine Dorries.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
It was just so funny.
I was going to slay that at the end because it's such great
well, value. My only thoughts for it was I wondered what John Harper's view of it was, because John has always been into the conspiracy stuff, but Nadine Dorries's was way off the scale, so I don't know whether John's got a view about Nadine Dorries's view. And last but not least, there's... I wonder what Andreas and Claudia think about the latest news that Sanchez could remain in power, because they're doing a deal with Puigdemont, mm-hmm. and they probably will get enough votes together that will keep Pessoa in control of the thing, which comes back to always my point, Giles. Yeah. These politicians will do almost anything to stay in power, because everybody knows if you're not in power, you can't influence decisions. Not directly, you can indirectly, protests and all the rest of it. But I just wondered, yeah, I was listening to it this morning on the news break with Dave's show, and I just thought, wow, that's going to be an issue for the Spanish. Sanchez staying in power, doing a deal with Puigdemont, and then doing away with, you know, all of the sentences that were given to the people that technically were traitors. Other than that, Gaza, I've been on from the phone every week. Gaza is unsolvable. Whatever anybody, and everybody keeps, they're still banging on about this two-state nation. You can only have a two-state nation if two nations want two states. And all of the time you've got Hezbollah, Iran, Hamas, or any of the other factions who are saying, we don't want Israel to exist, then you can't have two states. Because one side are saying, no Israel. If there's no Israel, Israel are going to say, OK, no Palestine. Israel want Palestine to exist. I find it difficult as well that they talk about a two-state setup when it's two states, two parts of a state, because Israel separates the West Bank from Gaza, and they are two different... I hate we're using the word, but this is what the Arab nations are made up of. They're two different tribes, two different sorts of people, two different sorts of everything. And people are trying to explain to me, and I listened. I go back to, which I thought was quite apt, and maybe Robert's got a twist on it as well. Kissinger came back from, that's a long time ago, I know,
right.
But he came back from the Middle East. And it was on an American news program, and someone was interviewing him after he returned. And effectively, you could see it in his face. It was almost like, what are we supposed to do here? There is no... And that's 30 years ago, something like that. And they're still banging on about this same thing. There is no solution other than enforced peace. That's not a two-state.
And that's not very... well, it is difficult to achieve that. But in the end, if you go down the line, what's happening? It's all... in the end, we're all humans, and all the humans want the same. They want to have peace. They want to have safety for their families. So in that sense, there's not much of a difference. I mean, everybody wants the same, right? But what is really a problem here is, of course, the religion. The religion is standing between it, and how to solve that. Although the Islam came, had the brothers, the our nephews of the Israelians. So in that sense, they're all coming from the same root, but they don't understand each other. So you say enforced peace, but who's going to enforce that?
Well, effectively, over the years, it's been the United Nations. But that always evolves, because people go, it's the United Nations. The United Nations have never really done it. What happens is the United Nations go in and create a peace arena, and then other countries come in and take over the role of peacekeepers. So, for example, in Africa, a lot of the peacekeeping was Dutch, British... and Spanish, lots of it in Africa.
Yeah,
so the United Nations go in, the Blue Helmets, as we call them, go in, they create the arena in which peace can happen. So if you take Bosnia, for example, Bosnia-Serbia, are two warring tribes, two Balkan warring tribes who will never live together.
Although they have all the same, and I repeat myself, they all have the same values in them.
All want peace, except for the minority who want to cause conflict. Listen, you know, if you just pop that into politics and you go, what's the role of the Communist Party in most countries in the world? It was to create some sort of upheaval, some sort of... because that's how you then move people away from their traditional thoughts that, we're all together, we all want peace.
Divide and rule, as old as the Roman Empire. Right?
So there will always be... You know, in the Arab world, there will always be people who say, we don't want the state of Israel to exist.
And it's lies to the lies we go. 952-78-4000. Morning caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, it's Gil from Calpe.
Morning, Gil.
Good morning. I agree with most of what is said. I don't think religion is the problem. I mean, religion stares things, but it's not as if anybody is trying to enforce anybody's religion on anybody else. So that part is not correct. But one very smart thing that was said is all this two-state solution. It's time to end this idea, because they've tried it many, many times and it hasn't worked. And every few years, somebody comes up and says, two-state solution, two-state solution. And the thing is, nobody wants it. The Palestinians certainly don't want it. The Israelis don't want it at all. Now, I mean, now, with what happened after what happened in Gaza, hardly anybody wants it or thinks it's possible. I mean... somebody will come up and say, well, there was this survey that said, well, with surveys, you can get any answer you want, depending on how you pose the question. But, I mean, in Israel, you have people say, we don't want the state solution, period, because, you know, it's our historical land, God gave it to us, and so on, you know, and so on. But then you have the people say, well, we're not against it in principle, but it's been tried, and it doesn't seem to work, and it's too late now, because... you know, the West Bank is very populated with all the settlements and everything, and you know that train has gone. You know, so very, very few people think that this is even possible. So the best thing for solving this problem is forget this solution, because it's not going to work. They've tried it time and time again. I mean, Clinton and Arafat and Barack spent 7 years on it all together and looked, you know, tried to turn every possible stone to see whether it works. It doesn't work. On the other hand, I do think that there is a solution, but my solutions are not very politically correct.
Yeah, well, we had your solution last week, and the phone lines exploded when you came back with that gift. So,
absolutely,
you
know. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
But thank you for your call in there. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Alf.
Can I just say, because, you know, Robert said something that is what is p- perceived by most people that it is religious differences. Mm. People see it as that. So,
you know, it's a tool. It's a tool to use to fight each other.
Absolutely.
And that doesn't mean it's the core of the problem, but it's at least
absolutely.
A tool.
And the same applies. You know, you could go Russia, technically as a communist country, has no religion, but it does.
It has
lots of different religions. There's Christianity, there's Orthodox Russian, whatever they call it, Orthodox Russians. They have lots of different things. They have Muslims. They have all sorts of things. But they control it because they've all learned over the period to live with each other.
Same thing in Singapore, where I live.
Yeah.
The six kinds of religions, and they all live very peacefully.
They all live together. And the difference is here is that in the 1930s, long before people talk about after the Second World War, in the 1930s, the Western world, I'll put it as the Western world, imposed a country called Israel in the Middle East. They didn't call it Israel then. It wasn't too long after.
There were some alternatives. There was also some places in Australia.
Malta. Southeast Asia.
So in the end, you put them in the middle of an Islam area.
Because the Jewish community argued that was their natural home because of Jerusalem. So Gil is technically right. It's not really about religion, because it's not. But the perception of probably 99% of the rest of the world is this is all...
You can wonder if religion was not there, non-existing.
Absolutely.
What would be the situation?
I think it would
be quite peaceful.
What would happen? And you go, well, you know, the same God applied when they had the wars. So we sent all these knights, didn't we, to the Middle East to kill off all these...
Taking back Jerusalem, that was the whole thing, wasn't it?
We're talking
Crusades here.
That's my
expertise.
That's why I didn't want to get into it too deep, because you'd destroy me historically.
But that was religion, because they wanted to take back Jerusalem for
real Christianity.
Well, the Pope had it.
They had the same God.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it was the same.
But the Christians gave up, I believe, on that idea to get back Jerusalem.
Well, it was somewhat difficult to sort of keep the four Crusader states going because of logistics. It's an awful long way from Central Europe to Jerusalem overland.
Because of all the conspiracies.
Exactly. Anyway.
And all the conspiracies. Yes. What are they called? Come on, tell us what they're called. All the... Was it the light people, I call them?
Illuminati.
The Illuminati. Yeah,
exactly.
The light people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you know, I have a question.
Yeah.
You know that. All the weapons that Israel is using, all the guns, the planes, the fighter planes, they're delivered by America mostly. They don't have their own weapon industry, do they?
No, and Britain. They're not allowed to have their own
And Britain also.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And France. And Spain, and Germany, how many more Western countries?
Okay.
So do you know, at
the current moment, because they're using them big time, is there a new supply? Or do all these countries say, well, this is enough, we force you via that route to stop it in a way?
I didn't
hear anything about that.
Well, I personally would imagine that like Hamas, like Hezbollah, like Iran, like Syria... They've been stockpiling weapons probably for the last 20 years. And Israel just go, same with Ukraine, isn't it? It took months before the Americans and the Brits and the Polish and all that could refeed them with army.
Yeah, but that also had another reason. They just wanted to... They don't want to commit themselves because they didn't know at that time how strong Russia was. So they waited a few months.
Yes, but they still had weapons there ready to fight the Russians. Mm. They'd been fighting for 7 years.
And it's the phones we go. Morning, call you live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles. How are you? And how's the panel? Are you okay?
I'm very well, thank you, Jason. And yourself?
Not so bad, not so bad. I'm calling twice today. Second time on the humanity side, I always speak on it, which I'm consistent in. But the first time, an overview of this is this horrendous, barbaric situation with Hamas and Israel. I don't take sides because I'm against all war. You understand that? But what I say is that I believe that Hamas did this horrific act because of the Abraham Accord that was going to be signed with the Arab states, with the other horrendous regime, which is Saudi Arabia, who buries women up to the necks in soil and smashes the skull to pieces with rocks and stones for infidelity. But that's by the by. But they're our friends. So it depends in the world who your friends are. And then you want the narrative and you claim the moral high ground. The problem is here, Hamas are winning this. What they did was they did this horrendous thing because they've thrown a wrecking ball into this agreement with the Arab states. The agreement would have meant they would have never got their Palestinian state. Why? Because the conditions would be set by Israel and they would never be met. So by changing the situation, they have very cleverly changed the paradigm. So now everything is up in the air. The world is sort of polarizing in a dangerous way. I think this man is not representative of every good, honorable, God-fearing Jew. I think this man is a Zionist, a bully.
Netanyahu, you're talking about.
I'm on about the president of Israel. I know what's wrong with Hamas, and I don't, what they've done is absolutely wrong. But this man is a nuclear power backed up by his big nuclear power friends. Unlike Putin that got done for war crimes, this man will never, ever answer for these heinous crimes. Our warfare has changed, Giles, from honour and chivalry and bravery and courage, be it on the end of a gun or better still a sword. Now wars are fought with pressing buttons, and everybody spectates, don't they? You know, on the radio or on the television, it's like a football match. And people become desensitized to this sanitized warfare. Nobody's talking about the Ukraine conflict now because our fickle interest has switched to this one. But the problem is, with Poppy Days coming, I'll go on to this later, anybody that puts children, any soldier or any politician that puts children at the front of a battle by discriminately bombing, I know we did it in Dresden in the Second World War, is a coward, a bully, an affront to God, a betrayal of his faith, be it on a Muslim side or on Christian or Jewish side. This man is horrendous. And this man does not care about life. He doesn't care about the suffering. People are taking people to hospitals with horses and carts, for Christ's sake. How can this happen in this century while the world just looks on and stares? Remember, we've got Poppy Day coming where we all stand and sanctify our souls for one day where we remind ourselves that the blind indifference of war is no good. But we do that for one day and then we just carry on and we just, the world sits back and lets this kind of thing happen, be it in Ukraine or in this horrendous situation. The charities on the ground are crying out, and the United Nations is crying out for this to stop. There is so much impetus in this world for war, but it's the cowardly people that stand behind, not the soldiers on the ground, on the brunt of it. It's the cowardly people, right, that prefer war and bombing people into submission.
Jason,
right,
got some more calls in, Jason, but okay, thank you for your call in as always. 952-784-1000. Morning caller, thank you for holding. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Charles in Mallorca here.
Good morning to you.
Robert May.
Hello, Charles, you're dropping out on me there.
Robert made a mistake in saying that Israel has no defence industry. It does. It was supplying South Africa during the apartheid times when nobody else would deal with them.
Ah.
No,
it's an error there.
Okay. No, that was
not a very graveyard. They don't obviously have any aeroplane capability or stuff like that. They do have quite a significant defense war industry,
yes,
oppression industry,
yes.
Because they are producing guns. The Uzi submachine gun, famous Uzi submachine gun, an Israeli invention. You know, they make stuff that are designed to keep a population under control, which is what they're doing. And I see a lot of very minor remarks in the media, both in the press and on the radio, including TRE, where they will say things which, although quite minor, are biased against the Palestinians.
Okay.
For instance, Dave this morning quoted some figures about the people killed in Gaza, in Gaza, and saying, but these figures are provided by the Gaza Health Authority, which is a Hamas organization. Of course it is. Hamas was democratically elected there. Of course it is. Just as the health service is done by the UK government. Huh? You know, of course it is. But would he say that about figures from the Israeli government? Would he doubt them because they're provided by a terrorist organization that has killed more than, I think now it's four times the amount of people that Hamas killed in that raid? It's a question. Look at the subtle things. The use of regime and administration, very typical one. And I remember that from the Iraqi war, one that I'm particularly involved in. My wife is a Christian Iraqi. Okay, so we, you know, I followed that one very, very closely. There were also, by the way, an awful lot of Christians in Gaza. A lot of Palestinian Christians, and they're being slaughtered just the same as the innocent Muslims, along with some of Hamas. Yeah, it is.
Thank you.
There's an awful lot of inherent bias. It's small, but it's there, and it makes a difference because it changes people's perceptions of what's really going on here. The real number of dead between Palestine and Israel. The Palestinians are way, way more than what are killed, what Israelis are killed.
Yeah.
For every Israeli, there's four or five times that of Palestinians killed. They run an apartheid state, and until that's stopped, there can be no peace.
And this is the problem, is it not? Sorry, I didn't catch his name. What was your
Charles.
Name? Charles. No.
Charles.
Charles.
Charles. Sorry, Charles. Part of the difficulty with discussing what happens in the Middle East is that everybody's got an opinion about everything, but nobody really has got any of the real answers or the real solutions. I said this last week on the radio, you know, people are great at coming up with what's the differences, great at what's coming up with what's wrong, but we're very short on how do we solve it. So it's like Jason came on and said about, Saudi Arabia does this, that and the other, but we still, you know, they're our friends. And I go, okay. So the Chinese, they're not doing much to the Uyghurs, only destroying a religion, destroying a tribe, destroying a culture. However they're trying to do it, to integrate them into Chinese society the way the Chinese want to do it. And yet we still want to do trade, and we still do trade with China. The Australians are just on the brink of doing another new one. So this will always happen in the world, and it's not about, we have to pretend that they're our friends. No. The world, whatever we think of it, has to trade with each other, and it's very difficult. You know, India has to trade with Russia. They've never been friends, but they have to do it because they've got things that they want to trade between each other. Also, the same applies with some of the things that said. Hamas were, we'll argue, democratically in inverted commas. Hamas were democratically elected. Yes, they were, ish. some years ago, and as soon as they got into power, they destroyed the opposition. So they haven't had any democratic elections for the last, what, 10 years? Maybe more?
Why? Hang on, but they did.
43%, only 43% of the population voted for Hamas. And it's now, they reckon, it's now down to 24...
What percentage voted for the Conservatives, for God's sakes?
Pardon?
Come on.
Say that again?
In the UK, what percent of the population voted for the Conservatives?
What, to get into power?
Yeah.
Nationally?
Yeah. 50, not a majority.
54% to my disgrace. And that's with a three-party system,
Got some more calls coming in now.
I just wanted to say, you know, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, but lots of these things are said as if, oh, well, this is the fact, this is the truth, this is the only truth. And you were right in saying, why is it they quote the things from Hamas as being questionable, but they don't quote the things from Israel as being questionable. And the same is applying to everything, and all this misinformation and dummy information, and yeah, it's gone on for years and years and years. Yeah, well, whatever they want to call it, but the Middle East is just—it's a bonfire.
What I always find also in the whole discussion with Ukraine and now in Israel and Palestine is that people take so extreme sides. I just miss a group or a majority of people say, I take in account their arguments, I take in account the other arguments, and let's see if from that balance we find can come to a conclusion. But it's polarizing, and it's that was during COVID, that was during the Ukraine, that's now during this whole thing in the Middle East. So what I miss personally is the weight and balance.
The balance. Thanks for your call in there, George. Going to go to another caller. Morning caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
This is Gil from Calpe.
Yes, Gil.
I'd like to correct a few things. Number one, there are no Christians in Gaza. Very, very few, if any. There were Christians in the West Bank, about 20% in the year 2000. Now it's about 1.5%. Okay, that's one thing. Another thing is about Israel producing weapons. Israel is one of the biggest producers of weapons in the world. I mean, it has sent lots of weapons to Azerbaijan, which helped them with the war against Armenia. It sent weapons to Chile and Argentina during the wars there. I mean, it doesn't produce
What kind of weapons are there?
Well, weapons that for the land forces, not aeroplanes,
exactly.
Not ships,
and not
submarines,
artillery. No, so it's the Uzis, the classic.
Well, Uzis are very old fashioned. I mean, they don't use Uzis in the Israeli army at all. You know, they're all for export. Yeah, they produce the Galil, which is a much better weapon, and that is also exported. That is not used by Israel itself. Israel does import M16s from America.
So it's all infantry, right? It's all infantry weapons.
But a lot, yes, but a lot which is used by the ground force is produced in Israel, and is a lot of it is exported. To do with aeroplanes, the Israeli aircraft industry works together with the Americans on producing aeroplanes. They do a small part of it because it's a very small country. It can't produce aeroplanes by itself, yeah? And it gets submarines. We used to get submarines from Britain. Now it's more from Germany. But so anyway, this is something I'd like to correct.
Okay.
Another thing somebody said, which is repeated a lot by the propaganda, Israel is an apartheid state, okay? Yep. The only place where you can think that Israel is an apartheid state where there's one law for one group of people and one law for another group of people is in the West Bank, okay? Now, suppose you solve this and they say, okay, no more apartheid, okay? We'll give all the Palestinians of the West Bank a blue identity card just like all the other citizens of Israel, and we'll let them vote for the elections in the Knesset, which, I mean, they can do that tomorrow morning, yeah? It's quite simple. But the problem is they don't want it, so it doesn't solve the problem. So those who complain about apartheid don't know what they're talking about, because you can't change this. When you talk about apartheid, you talk about, you know, people wanting rights just like anybody else in the country, but that's not what they want.
Gil, thank you very much for your call, and I got some more calls coming in, as you probably expect. Morning caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name, where you're calling from, what's your viewpoint, please? Hello, caller, live on TRE. Can you hear me? We just try and transfer that to another one. Just try and do that there. Excuse me one second. Sorry about this call. I was trying to get you live on the line, but if you could just call back and take a quick. It's the Ouija board. It was all going far too smoothly.
Ouija board's not working.
Well, it's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday indeed. Can I take a quick break and then back with more Viewpoint?
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. So it's back to the lines we go. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Charles in Mallorca again.
Yes, Charles.
Gil mentioned that they don't want a two-party, they don't want a single state. What he really means is the Israelis do not want a single state, because then they would be outnumbered by the Palestinians, so they would lose control. It's the Knesset that won't allow a single state to govern that area from the river to the sea. That's what would stop that one dead in its tracks.
Okay, thank you for your. I'm just going. Yeah, okay.
Gil was saying a two state. The Israelis don't want a two state, not a single state. None of them want a single state.
Well, hang on. You two choices, Alf. A single state, which incorporates all of the people living in the Palestinian area,
yeah,
or two states where they divide it up.
Yes.
Now they're not going to give up the massive amount of stuff they took in, what was it, 67?
Yeah.
67? Yeah. When I was a mere lad of 16.
Right.
They're not going to give up all that territory. They're still going to keep all the best bits, without any doubt, right? So still Palestine will be split into two pieces. Imagine back to Pakistan's being split up into two. That won't work, right? Gaza can never really be self-sufficient. It's not big enough. It's like a slice through the middle of London, populated at that population. There just isn't enough land for them to grow their own food in that area.
Bit of light-hearted. I'm from East London. We've always survived. Sorry.
I just want to say, you're
quite right.
But you didn't grow your own food in East London, Al.
Yes, we did in the war.
You're the other side, mate. You're from the north of the river. I'm from the south.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
That's because we've got webbed feet.
Right.
Anyway, we don't lose the point with Charles.
Yeah.
You're just agreeing with what I said right at the beginning. The two-state system will never work because exactly what you've just said, and not only split into two, but split into two within themselves, effectively warring factions. So trying to impose that, it's just never going to work. Trying to even talk about it, and somebody said, oh, they've tried this many times. They've never tried a two-state system. They've only ever talked about attempting to try it. And every time they get close to it, they did a couple of years back, before Netanyahu was elected, they were very close to coming up with some deal. Part of the understanding of having Saudi Arabia get involved in it.
It's not only these two who don't want it. It's also an area. You know, they all have opinions on it.
Absolutely. So. Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq,
yep.
Syria, Lebanon, they've all got their view. But Saudi Arabia was seen as this huge lump in the middle that's now sort of controlling the Arab population. So they want to bring them in to see if they can broker. And I'll keep on saying it. How do you achieve some level of peace? Some level of peace. I don't think it will ever be peaceful.
Neither part on this conflict, wants either solution. The Palestinians would accept a one-state solution. But that the Israelis would never accept it, because it means they would then be in a minority.
And what is the paradox the paradox of all this killing, especially the men, the children, who potentially maybe not even interested into Hamas, have all the reasons now to become more extreme, right? So I think
agreed, absolutely agreed.
A monster is created.
Thank you for your calling. Going to go to some more. Thanks very much for your calling, George. Morning, caller. You're live on TRE. Thank you for holding. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Giles, Peter.
Yes, Peter. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Of two guys from London get tetchy over their area. We got no chance in the Middle East, have we? as far as the weaponry goes, the weaponry, who was it called in earlier?
Gil, probably.
Marine. No,
before, Jason.
Jason. He nailed it beautifully. He said that it's like a football match. It's like a spectator sport. Absolutely perfect. That's what it is. The weaponry now is so sophisticated that the hand-to-hand combat virtually doesn't exist. And the problem is when we talk about solutions, it's the negotiators that are stopping the solutions because they always seem to think there is everybody has to be happy in some way. And that only turns out that nobody's happy. As I said before, not as quite as much as Bill, but I think, and I said on day one, that they should seize the Gaza. Now, you just said Gaza is a vegetable patch. It's the size of an allotment. No one can really exist there. And if it's incorporated into Israel, I think the sooner the better. I think what they're doing is absolutely right. They've cut the north from the south. They said it weren't south. They're destroying the north. And because of this weaponry is so sophisticated and people keep saying they're blowing up hospitals and that, then there's the argument, was it a hospital? Was there a weapon? Is there a tunnel there? They know. You fire a pop gun, Israel knows exactly where it came from, when it was fired, who's firing it, who's in them tunnels. And that's what they're going to do. They're going to eradicate Hamas to the point that there is literally nobody left. We won't be talking about them like ISIS, pockets of them. Now, when they, and again, going back to weaponry, you've got a guy on your panel, I would like to say Dutch, I don't know if he is Dutch, but from Holland. But there's where weaponry generates from. It's because they have the most sophisticated machine that make all the chips. So without Holland, the world doesn't exist in chip manufacturing. And without chip manufacturing, modern weapons don't exist. So Holland could just pull the chips and we'd all go back to...
Sorry for that. No, but that's what I was wondering in the beginning of this war, which I call a war, is that if you're so sophisticated, being Israel, with all your technical knowledge, and you want to wipe out Hamas and not the civilians... Why don't you do that? Why are you bombing?
Because Hamas, the Hamas are using people as shields. If to get to Hamas, you've got to get to the people. There's going to be collateral damage. Horrible word and a horrible thing. And like Jason, I don't believe him.
Is that Hamas who is deliberately finding groups of children to defend themselves? And is how do we deal with that?
They operate from schools and hospitals. And also, when people keep saying about the democracy and Hamas were elected, Hamas. Party, the political party, operate out of Qatar. The military version operate out of Gaza and that area. And they don't even speak to each other. So the elected Hamas wouldn't have even known this was going to happen. Now, there is an argument and that possibly Israel let it happen so they could do this. There's many reasons why, but when we talk about solutions... When you talk about people saying this is religion, when you talk about religion, you've got Shias, Sunnis, Wahhabis, Sufis, you've got 150 smaller sects of Islam, you've got the semi-hybrid religion of Baha'ism. This is not about religion. It's about money, well, control, and power.
The effect it has on the rest of the world is that now the Muslims all over the world, they see this as so you see that they were not agreeing each other being a Muslim, but because you have so many different groups.
Can I just finish what I was going to say? Because we're going to go to break in a minute. Listen, the problem is, if you want to solve this problem, it's just like Ireland, right? It's about money. That's all it's about. Who controls the oil? Who controls? Now, Saudi are willing to talk to Israel, and they're beginning to recognize that we're moving into a technical world, and without Israel and without the technology, Saudi are going to struggle. So they're all beginning to realize now that we're moving into a new industrial age of technology, and they're going to have to start talking to each other. And the hand-to-hand combats are literally over. Ukraine was mentioned. Putin's just sitting there, and that's what he does. Is he waits for them to fire a rocket, and then he blows it back at them. And he's not going to go and blow Ukraine up. He doesn't want Ukraine, but soon after the winter, he'll go in there hand to hand. He doesn't blow up all those Russian stuff in there, and he don't want to kill Russian people, so he'll go in from building to building. The same will happen in Gaza. But the only reason that you want to solve this problem, you have to do the same as Ireland. right? You take Gaza, you blitz it, you then rebuild it. BlackRock and all them will come in and make billions of dollars. You rebuild the Gaza, you incorporate into Israel, you build new ports, new infrastructure, hotels, you make it a beautiful place. People start visiting there, and the people who don't have jobs, who don't have hope, who don't have money, suddenly have jobs, they have money, they have homes.
And
just like Ireland, they start investing and they start earning money. And then in 5, 10, 15 years' time, they'll all be living, not happily ever after, but just like Ireland, they'll be living together. And Ireland now is listed as one, if not the richest country in the world. Now, they did that purely by investing and taking away the incentives of people, because all they want is money and power. As Alf keeps saying, they want the power. And when Jason said about Netanyahu, every world leader there is, every person in this world who runs a country, exactly the same as Netanyahu. It's all about power. It's all about money. Yes. And until they...
So power, can we say...
Israel,
can we say...
They're not going to get any hope of peace.
Yeah. So if you say power, can I say equivalent to that is oil? So oil means you have the power.
Well, that's what I just said.
And then the very interesting subject, because when we're getting into a planet where oil is not ruling anymore, because we find all kinds of alternatives, all the oil states will lose their...
Oil's around for another 100 years, at least.
Okay, so you and I will still drive our cars. Good.
Yeah, all the big car companies are now are shelving all their projects of making electric cars.
Those bongos mean that we came up to the end of the first half of Viewpoint, but thanks for your call in. Right, then go to the national, international news and then back for the second half of Viewpoint.
Talk Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment. Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Always live, Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown, with you for the next 57 minutes or so. If you want to get your viewpoint across, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And it's to the WhatsApps we go. If you want to get involved WhatsApp-wise, +34 645 99 67 95. Going to the WhatsApps and other electronic media. Here we go. Israel cannot back off. As to do so just once would be the end of the Israeli state. This war is totally due to religion and as such has no possible solution, as neither religion will ever allow the other to beat them. Ultimately, Israel will reach a point where it feels it has reached an acceptable stalemate, at which time the UN will send in a peacekeeping force and relative calm will then exist until the next time. Meanwhile, this one coming in saying the root of the problem, this is George in Alveria, and good morning to you, George. The root of the problem is the cancerous effect of Zionist doctrine, which the rulers of Israel follow. They do not want Palestine and Palestinians to exist within a Palestine, but within Palestine borders. The Palestinian Authority submitted to have a two-state solution. A Security Council resolution, Israel never adheres to UN Security Council resolutions. Whilst the USA is mainly followed by the UK and are too lenient and weak to force Israel to follow resolutions. So land grabbing, assaults, torture, all terror tactics are exercised by the Zionist rulers to turn a blind eye. Double standards prevail. They created a division between the PLO and Hamas, allowing money to filter through to them and Hamas leaders to stay away from the PLO. This is in Alveria, George. Christians are very prominent in Palestine. Most of them now as refugees in Jordan, Lebanon, still have properties within the occupied territories. We're unable to experience good quality of life. Meanwhile, these coming in as well. Morning. I wasn't going to listen in this week after last week's programme, but hey-ho, I have. I would like to to show my disgust that Jill's views aren't politically correct. That's hogwash. It's just inhuman and evil. Thank you. Meanwhile, morning, Giles, Andy and Fuencarola. These people who believe that Israel will eradicate Hamas are deluded. The Israeli revenge attacks, which have killed or injured thousands of Palestinians, will radicalize a new generation of Hamas recruits. And this one... Charles has a good point about the small descriptive words bandied about affecting opinions. A really well-balanced show today. Thank you very much. If Israel amalgamates the Palestinians, then the Arab population would surely soon exceed the Jewish people and vote them out. And those are your points coming in this far to the lines we go. Morning, Cooley. You're live on TRE. You see, somebody's replying through jazz. There you go. I think. Unless it's Kissinger. He's got a lounge act now. Anyway, that was certainly different. I can only imagine that somebody on one of those marketing calls, not knowing that they've been given a number that is in fact Talk Radio Europe. I normally put those on a Friday afternoon if they call in, put them live. Right, let me get rid of that one. Stay with me, please, panel, and then I shall go live to this one. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles. It's Alan Jones in Gandia.
Good morning, Alan. I'm very well, thank you. And yourself?
Excellent. So what I want to keep saying is that there was a solution to the two-state Palestinian-Israeli problem when in 1993, exactly 30 years ago, President Clinton was in the White House with the Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin and the Palestinian leader. And they agreed the Oslo Accords, which were again affirmed 2 years later, which would have settled the fact that the Israelis would be recognized by the Palestinians as a viable, a real state, and the Israelis would recognize Palestine as a real state. And this was all going nicely until Netanyahu and his Likud party and his right-wing supporters did a Trump and said, we can't have this, this is wrong. And he, the Israeli prime minister, was assassinated by a Jew extremist, and it all fell apart. And Netanyahu has been against the two-state two-state solution forever. It will never happen with people supporting Netanyahu. And I can go on.
And that's exactly what I've been saying all the way. There is no solution. 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, go back. I'm not talking, I don't want to get into the guilt stuff about...
It was there, but the right-wing Jews... The fundamental
who crucified
their Messiah.
Absolutely.
Well,
but
okay,
however it was, there was a group of people who weren't going to have it, who weren't going to agree to it, and who were going to scupper it. And that's been the same throughout the history of the Middle East. You can't force this onto people who want to be... And the problem is the minority are big enough to create the mayhem, which causes the continuous disturbance. Peter said before the break about making people happy in a compromise, blah, blah, blah. The state of compromise that exists means that neither sides, if it's three, are ever happy. Compromise is not about making people happy. I spent 30 years negotiating as a union official, and when you did deals, there was always a compromise. Neither side was happy. However,
that's not good either.
Well, yeah, but however, everybody eventually ended up being satisfied. And that's what caused the peace. That's what creates the peace. People aren't happy, but they are satisfied with where they've got. They will still continue to try to get what they want. That is life. That is what humanity is all about. But trying to say that, that this is going to be resolved by some form of compromise means you're trying to, you know, someone assumes you're going to keep the Israelis happy and someone's going to keep the Palestinians happy, and that's not going to happen. Neither side's going to be happy, but they have got to arrive at, and you're right, Clinton was so close to getting it there. But then a group of at the time, Israelis, decided they weren't happy. Going to disrupt it.
Going to go live to another call. Morning call, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Gil from Calpe. Yes, concerning Gil. The history of this, the people who called got it completely wrong. For instance, the man who said the Jews crucified the Christ. I'm not going to
shut down anybody who comes in with that one, because
we're not talking about it today anyway. But he had a few other things that I will comment about. He said that about the Oslo Accord, he got it completely wrong. The Oslo Accord of 93 was a temporary arrangement to do with while the negotiations take place. That's what it was. It wasn't a peace agreement of any kind. It was just, what are we going to do? What arrangements are we going to have while the negotiations were taking place? They planned for 5 years. It ended with 7. Now, they blame Netanyahu. Netanyahu had nothing to do with it, because the last part of the negotiations were with Barak. Netanyahu was in the opposition then. It didn't get to the stage where the Knesset had to approve it or anything. So he had nothing to do with it whatsoever. Barak and Arafat did not agree on, and Clinton was involved. They did not agree at all on this. So they got it completely wrong. I don't know. You know, and they just blame Netanyahu for everything.
Okay, thank you for your call. Sounds like you're doing somebody's doing some soaring, by the way, in the background there, Gil, next to you.
No, not me, it's my neighbour, and my neighbour's drilling and making a noise, but I can't complain because I had some work there yesterday.
Okay, thank you very much. Getting his own back.
Where's the compromise?
Thanks very much for calling there, Gil. 952-78-4000. This in from Dawn. Hello, I think Viewpoint is entertaining, but should have repetitive warnings that statements are personal and are not necessarily based on truth. Sadly, many listeners will accept these broad, emphatic statements as fact. We do put a disclaimer at the end of the show, so fair. I'm not going to say, if I was to go through every time somebody made a statement and say, we do not agree with that, we'd get about one statement in every 3 or 4 minutes. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Charles, Peter again.
Yes, Peter.
Quick one. Alf keeps saying there's no solution. Where's the IRA now? Where's ETA now? They don't exist. Why don't they exist? They didn't get what they achieved. They never got what they achieved. They didn't achieve what they wanted. Neither of them. ETA didn't get what they want. IRA didn't get what they wanted. None of them. But where are they now? They're all sat with their pipe and slippers, very wealthy, enjoying their retirement. Why? Because they were given money and power. Now, like I keep saying, with Ireland, once they entered the European Union and they started rebuilding Ireland, many of those people invested where they were ignored, let out of prison, and they invested in the infrastructure, invested in the new Ireland, and now they're all very wealthy. Exactly the same as the wealthy Spanish ETA. Exactly the same. And that all you have to do with this lot is exactly the same. You need to rebuild Gaza. Somebody has to control it. Looks like it's probably going to be Israel. Once you start rebuilding it, as we've all said, 85-95% of the people there are absolutely had enough of it. They don't want it. They never did want it. But you've just got to get those extremists. Get shot of them.
The best way you're suggesting is that Hamas is being defeated by their own people, by the Palestinians.
Buy them off. Yeah. They want money. They want power. That's what it's all about in the Middle East. It's about, as we mentioned, it's about the oil, and the oil is going to be around for hundreds of years. It's not going anywhere. And you need to buy them off. They've all got a price, every one of them. Look at the unions back in the 70s when they tried to break Britain. What did they get? Nothing. What did you do? What did Thatcher do? Paid them off. Massive redundancies. Let them buy their council houses. They all got a price. Just so happens those
and it's all economics. Yeah, okay.
It's all about economics. Rebuild. Everybody's losing their jobs. Technology's taken over. The only way there's going to be any jobs in the future is large infrastructure building for the future.
Maybe we can some crowdfunding worldwide and solve this issue.
Yes.
Say again?
Maybe we can do some crowdfunding and solve this issue.
Well, yeah, maybe if we've got to find out what price, how much what, but there's a price.
Yeah. Thanks for your calling. Got some more calls coming in. Morning, Cooley, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello?
Hello, you're live on TRE.
Are you hearing me?
Yeah, hearing you.
It's Alan Jones in Gandia.
Uh-huh.
And, money is important. I mean, look at what Iran got when they thought that the Shah of Persia and his wonderful wife were being corrupt. They got the Ayatollah Khomeini. I mean, the reason the Shah of Persia fell down was because British and Americans wanted to monopolize their oil industry, which was a corruption, which obviously the locals didn't appreciate. The Shah and his wife were excellent leaders of Iran. They made it a most profitable, well-growing, almost democratic, ideal place to live. And then corruption from money to control their oil from America and the British destroyed that paradise. So yes, absolutely money. But my point is that all these peoples, Muslims of all different sects and Jews, they all have a religion which tells them not to murder. I mean, it's a commandment, and they have Abrahamic origins. I mean, Muslims think Mecca is important, but it's a complete marketing controversy, conspiracy.
Right.
And, you know, these people should be taught not to be Stone Age. That's my point.
We need an enlightenment.
Persia. It was Persia, by the way. It wasn't Iran. It was Persia when the Shah was there. Right. And you say paradise, and I'll put it in a slightly different way. Paradise for the few. For the many, it was still a horrendous place to live. They were still living in poverty. Lots of places never had clean water. You know, so we should stop there. And I worked with a guy who escaped from Persia, and he couldn't have been more scathing. And he was one of the select few who was looked after in Persia. He came to the UK. He had to lie about his age. And years later, we had to negotiate so that he could retire from British Telecom, as it then became, a normal retirement age. Otherwise, he would have had to have worked until he was 72 before he could retire instead of 60. So we should stop painting these pictures about perfection. There's never, people say to me, oh yeah, but in the UK, and you go, the UK, how many kids live at poverty level in the UK? Never mind about anywhere else in the world.
It's worse as today, I believe, especially also in Holland.
Well, we're going to come on to the question of homelessness anyway after the next break, as we move away from.
Oh, can I put my tent up?
You can put your tent up.
Yeah. It's cool. All right, morning, Cooley. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Charles. Felix here.
Morning, Felix.
Good morning. Are you still able to talk about Gaza? Yes.
Yeah. Yes, please.
Yeah. Okay. Just a point that Peter made, that the problem is in Gaza and the West Bank is it's a minority, and you remove the minority, problem solved, progress all the way. I don't think that's true. I think it's very, very untrue. I think it's the direct opposite, in that a minority would want peace, and in great majority are supporting the war against Israel in all aspects. And this is Gaza at the moment, but there is a developing war developing now in the West Bank or Judea and Samaria, and it has been ongoing. And this means that the attack, the re, the reason for the attack from Gaza is it's a deep going thing. The Israeli state really did let its guard down, and they know it, and there'll be cost to pay for that. But the conclusion by the Israeli people and by Jews everywhere, the majority of Jews everywhere, I should say that, is that they are finished with this idea of having peace with the Arab population and of giving land for peace and giving progress for peace, giving education for peace, giving free education for peace, giving free water into Gaza for 20 years, giving free electricity into Gaza for 20 years, while Gaza is sitting actually on an aquifer. They didn't need any water, really, but they were diverting money to arms, and the farmers were putting down wells that was poisoning the aquifer. Gaza is a traditional aquifer, you know, but a traditional oasis. So that's a lesson that the Jews have learned, that never again, because I said to you 2 weeks ago, first thing I said was that the Jews associate this attack from Gaza as a continuation of the Holocaust. It's a classic pogrom. Mm. In one house, I'll just finish this now. In one house, Carolyn Glick told the story. The Arabs went in. They killed the man. They raped the mother in front of two children. They poked her eye out. They raped the mother on the body of the man. They killed the two children.
Right.
They were able to reconstruct this afterwards by the position of the bodies, etc. So this is the lesson that the Jews have learned. And it's a different Jewish population now. This means that there will have to be a separation of these two populations. Jews have been there from 3,500 years ago, and they will fight now for a future that the two populations are separated, and there can never be a situation as happened in the south of Israel again. So this is a very deep-seated thing.
Thank you.
And the people who ring in don't understand the history. They haven't read the history. I doubt if they've read a single book. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Thank you for your call in. Thank you for your call in there, Fitz. Take a quick going to read a few bits and pieces. Hi, Giles. No time to call, but would be useful and insightful to mention Son of Hamas. It's a correct version of the Palestinian situation seen from the Son of Hamas founder, Mossad Youssef. I think if the public wants to know clarity about the situation, watch his talks. Son of Hamas. Okay. Just looking at some more bits and pieces coming in. Paul from Mihas, it's ironic how Israel never stops going on about the Holocaust, and yet now they are perpetrating their own Holocaust on the Palestinians. Right then, on that one, going to take a break and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. If you want to get involved with today's show, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Right, then we're going to get off the subject about Israel, Hamas and Gaza, because I want to look at a little bit closer into Europe. The Home Secretary, Suella Braverman, raised more than a few eyebrows over the past few days, referring to rough sleeping being a lifestyle choice. Your thoughts on this one, panel? Alf, you're laughing already.
Whenever she makes any statement, you have to wonder, who's behind her, two, who put these thoughts in her head, and three, what research has she ever done? I go back to the 1950s in London, where we still had the bombed out buildings and the ruins, especially around Aldgate. And there was lots of rough sleepers in those days. We called them tramps because we knew no better. But these were people who'd been made homeless and effectively distraught because of the war. I know 50 sounds a long way after, but you know, 5, 6, 7 years after the war, we were rebuilding. And it's gone on ever since. And there are lots and lots of reasons why people become homeless. I've never met anybody, I've never heard of anybody who runs any of the welfare institutions. I've never met anybody from any of the charity organisations. And remember, as a union official, I covered a significant number of charities, the workers in the charities. I've never heard any of them say, these people chose to live on the streets as a lifestyle. They had problems, either mental problems, or they'd been thrown out by their family, or they had disputes, or they had no money, or they had... You know, there's a multiplicity of reasons. However, there were people, because I also lived near Epping Forest, there were people who chose to live in the forests. They weren't... they were homeless, obviously, but they chose to live in the forests. Because they would go, I'm going back to my roots, I don't have to be part of society, I don't have to be part of the human race, I can go and live in a forest. They didn't choose to live on a concrete strip at Tottenham Court Road, sleeping in doorways, and crappy old sleeping bags that they'd nicked out of bins and things
but
like that.
That's
the only lifestyle change I've ever seen of somebody homeless.
I tried to follow this because it's England and it's far away from Holland, of course, but I did my best to dig into it. I think these people, you're referring to people who didn't have money, marriages broke up, lost. But I think that these people now, the problem in what I understand is that they're immigrants or they're...
That's what Suella Braverman says, because she tailors every single comment she makes about every single issue.
So the people who are in their tents now are all British.
The majority... because you're going to come back to me wrong. The majority of rough...
By the way,
thank you very much. The majority of rough sleepers tend to be white males over the age of 35. A lot of them ex-forces. This is the big thing. And so, therefore, it's not a question of immigrants coming onto the streets. The only situation where people will be forced onto the streets is basically if they come over and they're refused asylum, basically. And then we're going to have a problem.
That means they're escaped.
So
they've escaped from the asylum centre.
One of the big problems is that she's now pitched a ban on tents in urban areas, and this sits on your own private land.
So you cannot have a tent on your
which is going to really mock up. If you are waiting for the sale at Harrods and you put the tent on Wimbledon, you can't put a tent up. I mean, this is the buy thing, but
because you might be homeless.
She's also going to put introduce a penalty for charities giving out tents now. Because you spent some time homeless, didn't you, for an article?
I was 1 week on the streets as an undercover journalist because they said, you never give money to all these homeless people. It's all fraud. And I thought, we can have opinions on it. But the best thing to do is to pretend you're homeless. So I had my beard and I had my old gloves and I was living in the streets, literally.
Right.
For this undercover story. And every day I got... 1 or 2 euros, if I was lucky. So the whole story about, these people earn too much, they're just sitting there doing nothing, it's not true. And by the way, it was not very funny to sleep in the streets. And the thing was, it was Amsterdam. Mm. The thing was, I was pretending to be homeless, and I was sitting in certain areas, nothing happened. But when I went to the PC Hofstraat, which is considered the Chanel, the Louis Vuitton street, bigger street probably in London, within 2 minutes, there was police taking me away because other parts of the city I could see it.
Yeah.
But not this street, because that's a shame for them.
Were you worried about violence? Because, we've lived in London, not together, obviously, half of mine, but there's a thought.
In a tent.
In a tent.
You wouldn't have survived this London, Giles.
Yeah.
Alf and Giles in a tent in East London. That would be the...
And the tent was too small.
The tent was too small. I've completely lost. No, but what I'm saying is there are, you know, there, if you are, if you, because this is a, according to the Home Secretary, this is a lifestyle choice you're now making to live on the street. You know, I'll leave my comfortable house, my you know, my heated place in London, and go and live in the tent on, you know, underneath a bridge in whatever, in Vauxhall or London or Waterloo. I mean, there's also violence. I mean, there is violence, between. There can be violence in, because a lot of people on the streets have psychotic problems, have drug and alcohol problems. And also there is the violence of those who would see almost people's undermention as you know, lower class, you're on the streets, you're worth nothing. We had this in Madrid with the poor woman being killed.
Francisco, you have it. But it's a painful part. But what is the beginning of all this? It's poverty or...
Yeah, it's homelessness. Homelessness because there's no homes. Because
it's one of 100 things.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's not because you like it.
No. I mean,
but so these words were not rightly chosen.
Well,
so,
indeed.
15-year-old kid who's fell out with their parents.
But did she regret those words?
No,
did she take
this
them
is
back?
Let's get to the lines. Morning, Cooley, live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please? Hello, caller.
Hello,
caller. You're live on TRE.
Oh, it's Peter again.
Go, Peter.
Yeah, just a quick one on this one. Especially kids, you've got Alf on there, who's a very pro migration into the UK, his fruit pickers, as he likes to call them. It was announced a week or so ago that 25 people now, or 25 people waiting to view rental properties. I've just sold a rental property. I'm not in cut all ties with the UK, and I don't want to be involved in that. It's too much paperwork. But I have a friend who has a very large portfolio of properties, and I was talking to him the other day, and he confirmed that. He said at least 25 people waiting on every rental. I said, what do you do about it? Increase the rent, but it's so high, you're investing in tenants coming in. Now, when you've got mass migration from the country, they have to live somewhere. Everybody has to live somewhere. Otherwise, you have homelessness. Now, if you don't have enough properties, you still keep bringing people in, then you have to increase the rents because supply and demand. If you've got 25 people waiting for something, then you just keep increasing the price and get it down.
Yeah, Peter, you're breaking up on us again. I think that line has happened to you before. Alf?
Well, Peter's always going to be right with this stuff. But again, we're back to... It's very easy to talk about this is what the problem is. What we very rarely talk about, again, is what's the solution. The solution is build more affordable properties. The Tories have let us 13 years of non-house building, you know, whatever they argue. I'm not saying that Labour would come in overnight and change all of that, but they didn't want to fixate on how do we deflect from it. So you wheel out Suella Braverman, who's probably talking about some of the ex forces people who, by natural, because they've been trained to do it, would go and get themselves an igloo tent or whatever, because they know, you know, sleeping in a... But they don't pitch up in the middle of some town centre. They go to places that are quiet. Yeah. They go to places that are forestry. They might go into the towns and cities to forage for food or whatever, but they're not... It's not a lifestyle. They don't choose to live like that. They choose to live like that because they've been forced to, because they've got nowhere else to go. If you go into central London, the Army and Navy Institute, I think it's called, or Army, Navy and Air Force Institute, off Tottenham Court Road, and my mate, for whatever reason, used to stay in them, and they're like these strange little rooms you could hire. You know, like the American song, you know... No place for
King of the Road.
King of the Road.
Yeah.
Like that. So these rooms, they had no... The walls never went to the ceiling. The doors...
Is there a shortage of housing in England?
Oh, absolutely.
Terrible.
Very much.
Absolutely. The same thing in Holland.
Not just a shortage of housing. A shortage of affordable housing.
So in Holland, we were saying the same thing.
Well, and what is painful is that, especially the youth, you know, they're in their 20s, 30s, they cannot get a house. I mean, when you're in your 50s, probably you may made it, you were in time to get your mortgage and you have your house. When you have a feet between the door, you can go on, right? But to have some money to buy a house, so it's very difficult. And what is painful and what is dividing now a society is that when you take in refugees, like from the Ukraine, because they're with open arms, they were taken in, not the Syrians. Because
you want European refugees, that's the whole thing.
They don't have blue eyes and blonde hair, so we were more strict to the Syrians than the Ukrainians. So it's painful for the young people to see that these Ukrainians being pampered in a way that they get a house, they get an allowance. But at the same time, they're driving their new Land Rover. It happens, you know. So where is the check on their wealth? There's no check anywhere. So that gives a big diversion between youngsters who don't have choices and people who come in and take the houses. This is an old problem, and we cannot deny it. It's not there because it's just happening in front of my eyes. And I try to keep a neutral position on that, but I have to admit that sometimes it's very painful to see.
It's also not a modern phenomenon. When I was 21 when I got married, I lived with my in-laws for a year. We couldn't find even a rental property anywhere near so I could get to work and my wife could get to work. We then had the luxury of a local council that instituted a scheme. London was always a growing older population. So in order to keep young people in London, you had to give affordable housing. Unfortunately, what they did is they built these tower blocks. I mean, I lived in one of the tower blocks next to the next block to Roland Point, which is a tower block that fell down.
At least the ones who were taking the houses was the old generation,
no,
British.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
So because apples and pears. Right.
But at least there was half an opportunity. So I had to wait a year, and then I went into this flat, nice flats, you know, I'm not going to knock them, other than, you know, you had to use the toilet, the communal toilet, which was the lift, and 12 stories up, like, with a pile of shopping because the lifts weren't working.
Right.
And stuff like that. So you suffered that, because at least we had somewhere we could call our own. And then I was offered the opportunity to go into a house. Unfortunately, a little while later, the Tories come to power and Thatcher introduced this thing, the right to buy for council tenants.
Yeah, but the houses were not taken by the Swedish or the Dutch.
No. But they were being taken by the Senegalese, by the Vietnamese, by the Rwandans, by the Congolese, by the Ghanaians, by, you name it, the Indians, the Pakistanis.
So it's not new.
Do you want to name a couple? That's what I'm saying. It's not a modern phenomenon.
Yeah.
And then I tell you, when I was selling to come here, the local supermarket was all brown, if I put
got
it
some
in a nice way. Because they were all Asian.
Yeah.
When I moved to come here, we went back a year later, and all of the people in the local supermarkets were all white. And we couldn't understand a word they were saying because they were all from Bulgaria, Romania, you name it. They were all from Eastern Bloc countries, ex-Eastern Bloc countries. And so we've suffered that time after time after time. We've always dealt with immigration and immigrants coming into the UK. However, go to Sweden and tell the Swedes it was great for them to take in a population of 11 million, take in a half a million people from the Middle East in 1 month.
No.
Because that's what they had, flooded them. They couldn't cope with it, so they created ghettos. And now what you've got is ghettos and ghetto gangs.
Right, going live to the lines, 9527 84000. What's your name? Thank you for calling. What's your name? Hello, caller, can you hear me? No, I think that might be Peter trying to get by. Going to do a quick break and then back for the last 10 minutes or so. Viewpoint.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
And we're into the last 10 minutes or so of the show. Morning, caller, you're live. Terry, what's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please? Yeah, we still can't get that, unfortunately. If you want to get involved with today's show, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
952 784 000. Quick few bits and pieces coming in. Hello, Giles. Great show as usable. Usual is usable as usual. To respond to Felix, the reason the citizens of this world are demonstrating against the genocide in Gaza committed by the Israeli army is simple. Israel has been committing these war crimes for 75 years with impunity. Enough is enough. Blimey. Meanwhile, another one. The experts at the United Nations, including its head, have described Gaza as a graveyard for children as a result of the genocide that Israel is committing against the Palestinians. The reason the citizens of this world are demonstrating against genocide in Gaza committed by the Israeli army is simple. Israel has been committing... Okay, it's been a repeat once. Thanks for that. Meanwhile, back to... You have to build more social housing. Stop blaming immigrants. That's one of the... We're talking about the homeless thing. And also, Paul Braverman, it's almost as like she wants to provoke Sunak into sacking her with a view to launching a leadership bid. Sunak is weak and should never have had her near the cabinet, but needed to appease the far right of his party. She wants hate marches at the cenotaph. She has called it hate marches, pro-Palestinian marches. Hate marches at the cenotaph. She wants violence and division. She's totally unfit for office. And wait till she sees all those tents at Glastonbury. She'll go nuts. Very good indeed. Very good indeed. And
she won't know the words to the songs.
She won't know the words to the songs. Morning call, let's try. Oh, no, and as my Welsh grandma used to say, and there he was gone. Yes, indeed. Into the last 6 minutes of the programme, just looking at some more bits and pieces coming in. From this today, just looking at some more. If you want to get your viewpoint in, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Just looking at some more comments for Braverman. The language of hate, this is from Eric, the language of hate thrown about like confetti. It's clearly not about hate. It's about the most despicable Home Secretary I've ever seen trying to save a few toxic Tory seats and further her bid to be leader of the Conservative Party. It is as simple and as rancid as that. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. Where are you calling from? What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please? Hello, caller, you're live on TRE.
How's it? It's Jason.
Yes, Jason.
Coming in at the end. So remembering Sunday coming. So on Sunday, we will all mourn the dead of enemy and our own side and realise the futility of war for 2 minutes. But then what happens is, if we're not careful, we're re-emerging to the world as it is, right? Where things are going really, really wrong and body counts get higher and higher. Somebody spoke of collateral damage earlier. And when the new norm and the acceptability, whether it be cluster bombs or sanctioned by the West or this bombing in Israel, when that becomes a new norm and this becomes acceptable, collateral damage, children, women, then what we've done is we've lost our humanity. So what is happening in the world as the datum point shifts, it seems to me that there is less tolerance towards one another, not just in migration and immigrants, but in how we try and resolve problems. It seems to me that there is no impetus for the church even or politicians to seek peaceful means to solve problems. So it's almost like the world has been enveloped in a darkness and is sick. Humanity itself is sick. It's not just Russia or Israel or Ukraine. Everything seems to be that we're losing our way. Do you understand, Giles?
Yes, I do indeed.
And so tomorrow, what I want people to do is just to look in the mirror after remembering Sunday, just to know who they really are. Because I have good news for you.
Everything that's irritating the planet will get rid of itself. So I think this will. Yes.
I believe I've said many times on this program. I think civilization is collapsing, but it needs to do because it's so sick. Hmm. It can't heal itself. This man's blind indifference, and we're on our knees, but we can't see it. People are so dumb or arrogant or unwilling to see it because it scares them.
So much for humanity, huh? So much for humanity. Yeah. It does such a beautiful planet.
Well, we don't deserve it, do we? God is in all things, in nature and in all cultures, in all people. But we just seek division.
Yep.
Thanks for the call in, Jason, as
anyway,
always.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And until morning call, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Right, John, you got me this time.
Oh, just about, Peter. Come on, before you... Better be short and sweet, though.
Short and sweet. Alf, first half of the show said no solutions to Gaza. And now, when I talk about the homeless problem, I talk about the problem, not the solution. The solution's quite simple. All of small business has been destroyed over the last few years. So all the big businesses build all the houses. Government land tax. Anyone who buys a piece of land, don't build it on anymore.
Peter, sorry, mate, we've lost. But it's the gremlins anyway. We're almost out of time. We're into the last 2 minutes. Just listening. Any finals or closers business today? No, I think. I think Sunak won't sack Braverman. He's spineless. Right then, almost out of time. It has been my pleasure and indeed my privilege to bring you today's viewpoint. Don't forget, this program will be repeated at 7 o'clock, so you can listen again to some of the arguments put forward and some of the viewpoints. And also today, preceding the 7 o'clock show will be Howard Brereton with Spain Today, Hannah Murray with TR in the afternoon. It's Animal Talk Day today with Selena, with the Lifestyle Show. But coming up next, following me this time round, is Stephen Ritson with Europe Today. He was off yesterday, so he'll be back all guns firing at 12 o'clock. Thanks for all the comments and the viewpoints in. My thanks to my guests, Alf Brewer, of course.
Thank you, Giles. Just to say, I agree with everything that everybody said, as long as they agreed with me. That's a good compromise.
That's the benign dictation. And for the first time, Robert Hamnick. Robert, thank you so much for coming in.
It was a pleasure to be here.
Well done, Robert.
Thank you, Charlie.
Well, maybe we'll see you again when you've recovered. Welcome to the wonderful world of Viewpoint. This show will be repeated. This again. Thank you very much for all your comments and all your concerned comments. Don't forget, of course, that there will be a disclaimer at the end of this show. But it's really great to have all your comments. Please keep them coming. And if there's anything else you think we should be covering, please let us know. You can drop me an email at giles@tre.radio. I will see you tomorrow with Let's Talk from 10 till 12. Going to be playing an interview I did with James Holland, historian, about his new book called The Savage Storm on the Italian Campaign, 1943. I really enjoyed that interview. But until we meet again tomorrow, have a great rest of your Tuesday. Thanks for the calls in. Stephen Ritson is up next.
Expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.